Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk. And today we're going to talk to she's an expert on Ed McBain. And she's written a book called Ed McBain, Evan Hunter, A Literary Companion. Her name is Erin McDonald. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
It's great to talk to you. So when did you first get interested in Ed McBain, and when did you become a fan?
Well, fairly late into the 87th Precinct series. I didn't actually start reading him until about 1999.
What happened before that?
Before that, I wasn't deliberately avoiding him. I just wasn't aware of him. I was in grad school, so I was immersed in the world of academia and reading a lot of the so-called great literature and theories about that literature. So I didn't have a lot of time to read for fun. And as the years went on in grad school, I kind of got tired of that and decided if I was ever going to get my PhD done, I would have to do it on something a little more interesting than what I'd currently been doing. So my sister actually bought me my first Ed McBain book, just knowing that I liked detective fiction and cop shows, and she thought it would be a good fit for me, and it was. So I switched my PhD dissertation topic to Ed McBain right then and there.
So you're telling me you've read everything he's ever written?
Probably 99% of it, yeah.
Wow.
Under all pseudonyms.
Like I was telling you before, when we were talking before, I met him twice in Bryn Mawr. Just a really nice man. I mean, just very down to earth and with a sense of humor and this is easygoing and interesting. I mean, just with so many interesting stories to tell.
Yeah, and I think his personality really comes out in his works, and that's half the reason why they're so attractive to people, because his humor and his intelligence and his compassion, you know, his grasp of social issues, all that really comes through in all of his writing.
So did you ever meet him?
I never got a chance to meet him in person. No, we emailed a few times, and he answered some questions for me over email, but I never got a chance to meet him in person.
Did you ever talk to him on the phone?
No. No, I wish I had.
So,
but by the time I got up the nerve to email him, he had already had cancer of the larynx. And
oh.
Yeah. So.
Was he didn't smoke, did he?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he did.
Oh, he did? Okay.
Probably not at that point, but at some point in his storied past.
Right. Now, he lived 1926 to 2005, right?
Yeah.
That is, so he was 74, so about almost, he didn't reach 80, almost.
No.
So, why do authors, and this is a constant question I have, why do they have pseudonyms like this? Why Evan Hunter? I mean, his real name, it wasn't even Evan Hunter.
Well, he would be very angry at you for saying that, because he legally changed his name to Evan Hunter.
Oh, he did? Oh,
yeah,
I didn't realize that.
Okay. Back in the 50s.
But, I mean, that wasn't the name he was born with, is what
no,
I was getting at.
No, it was Lombino. He was Italian.
Lombino?
Yeah. His grandparents came over from Italy. So the story goes that someone hinted to him that he might sell more books if his name was less Italian-sounding because of prejudices at the time.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, what a crazy world we live in, that people would judge you by your name.
Yeah, but I think that that really stuck with him. So that was a theme in most of his works, that idea of discrimination against immigrants of all kinds, racism. You can see that in pretty much everything he wrote.
So what he was going through, we got to see on the page, too, in some way, shape, or form, it looks like.
Yep.
I've read some of the 87th Precinct. I don't remember how many, but I do remember the humor in them was really good. Was always good. I mean, and humor is hard to write in mysteries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably what attracted me the most about it, to be honest.
I love Diana Ivanovich, but she does tend to have the same kinds of jokes each time. And I mean, the same. I mean, her detective, it goes through I don't know how many cars every book. You know, it's just a wee bit unrealistic, but she does it on purpose, obviously, but.
Right.
But humor is so subjective. I mean, you could read something and I could read something, and one of us might find it hysterical and the other one might think it was awful.
Yeah, that's true.
And you know, but I always remember reading the 87th Precinct and just laughing out loud at some of the things that were going on. They were just so funny.
Mm-hmm.
So, and listening to him in person, as I did in Bryn Mawr, he did definitely have a sense of humor.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he'd have to. I mean, the stuff he went through later in life with his health, I mean, he was able to maintain a sense of humor even after all that.
What happened with his health?
Well, aside from various heart attacks and...
Health. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said house.
No, health. And then he had the cancer, of course, and lost his voice. But he kept writing, and he kept a sense of humor. And I don't know how many people would have been able to do that.
It makes me wonder. I mean, writers, you look at writers today, and some like Stephen King, who could definitely afford to retire at this point, just continues to write, just absolutely continues to write. It's like it's in their blood, and they have to do it to survive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it seems like Ed McBain was the same way.
Definitely, yeah.
Where do you think he got the name Ed McBain from? I mean, where do you think that...
He said it just sort of came to him one day, and he asked his wife, and he said, "What do you think of Ed McBain?" And she thought it was good. So
it is a great name. I mean, it sounds like a fiction, a mystery writer.
Yeah, I mean, Evan Hunter, the name may have come from a couple of schools that he attended, Evander Childs, and then Hunter College. So he might have gotten the idea there.
So where do you go? How do you go about collecting all this information? I mean, obviously, do you own most of his books?
Yeah, but I didn't when I started. As I said, I started by writing a dissertation just on the 87th Precinct series.
Right.
And
there are how many of them?
I think there's about 55. It depends whether you include the novellas or not and things like that, but there are some short stories, too.
I interrupted. You were saying something else.
Oh, that's okay. I was just saying that I had a few of the 87th Precinct novels that were available in stores that I was able to just buy. But a lot of them, I had the earlier ones, obviously, I had to order online. I had to go to eBay and websites that sold rare books and things like that. And then when it came time to do The Companion, I wanted to do not only all of his mystery works, but all of his non-mystery works as well, because I had started reading those and discovered how wonderful they were. So I kind of insisted that they be part of the book, too. So I had, you know, most of the books I didn't have when I started, and I ended up spending years collecting them.
And people don't realize that he wrote the screenplay for The Birds.
Yeah. Yep. And he mentions that in a lot of his novels. That's one of his in-jokes that he gets in there all the time. Who wrote The Birds? Alfred Hitchcock didn't write The Birds. So,
I wonder, did Alfred Hitchcock come to him to write the screenplay, or how did that come about?
He did, yeah. Hunter said that he wrote a book called Me and Hitch, in which he it's kind of a memoir of his days working with Hitch on The Birds. And he also worked with him for a bit on Marnie, and then that didn't turn out so well. But, yeah, Hitch apparently sought out Evan Hunter because he had written a TV episode for him. And he liked it so much that he thought Hunter would be the guy to do this screenplay because he was trying to give it a more artistic sort of a flair. He wanted it to be taken seriously as a great film, apparently, rather than just a pop culture piece. This is Evan Hunter's spin on it, so I don't know if that's entirely true, but that's what he claimed. So.
Well, that's interesting. He told a story of one Christmas where there was a knock at the door and he opened up and Alfred Hitchcock was there with presents for his kids.
Yeah.
And I remember him telling us, or even today, and this was, I don't know how many years ago, I saw him 10, 15 years maybe. I'm not even sure how old he was at the time that I saw him. I'm trying to remember the year so I can connect it to because there's a chronology in here of all his life events, which is really cool. So we get to see his whole life right on one page there. It's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Where can people buy this book? Can they get it in a bookstore, or does it generally have to be ordered online?
I'm not sure how many bookstores would actually have it on the shelves, but it's definitely very accessible online at, you know, Amazon and pretty much any site you can think of.
Right. It's published by McFarlane, just so everybody knows.
Yes, yeah, and McFarlane sells it from their website as well.
Right. And you're living where now?
I'm in London, Ontario.
I was going to say, I'm looking at this on the back. It says London, Ontario. I didn't realize you were calling from Ontario.
Yes.
That's interesting. Do you wish he had written more? I mean, were you reading up until the time he died, his books?
Yeah, definitely.
What is it about his books that you enjoyed so much?
Like I said, I think his sense of humor, his writing style, his writing was superb, especially by the end. He had developed his craft to such a point where his writing was really concise. He had really realistic dialogue. He could work in that sense of humor. He had a good grasp of human nature and all of its ambiguities. But I think the thing that kept me wanting to write about him and writing about him for my dissertation was his ability to put social commentary into his works and not make it seem like social commentary. I mean, his works were so entertaining and suspenseful, you almost didn't realize that you're being taught something about society. But in every single book, he makes a comment on particularly American society, race, gender, class, all of those issues. And that's the thing that probably kept me the most interested.
I mean, this must have taken you quite a while. I mean, it's so comprehensive and fascinating to read. I mean, how long did it take you to put together?
At least 4 years, and I had spent several years before that writing my dissertation on him. So I spent probably close to 10 years reading nothing but Ed McBain or Evan Hunter.
Now, what exactly is a dissertation? I mean, I've heard that term before, and it's something. It's like a paper you write on a subject.
Yeah, it's just like a long essay. It was almost 300 pages.
Wow.
Basically, you make an argument about the author's works, and then you have to prove it. So that's what I did.
Right. Now, you also have a map of the 87th Precinct Detective Squadron, which is interesting.
Yes.
We get to see all the different names of the characters. This is really, I mean, for anybody who hasn't read his books, I mean, this is totally the book to get.
Well, thank you. I think so. I mean, I hope so.
I mean, there have been many times where in books I wish I could keep track of the characters, because there's so many of them. Even in mysteries, you know, Elizabeth George always has a lot in her books. I love reading her books, but I do have trouble with the characters sometimes, keeping track of who's who and who's related to who and where did I see that character before. And I mean, it's hard to remember all that.
Right. And because with his series, he wrote about an ensemble cast of characters that recur and, you know, throughout all the books, it's important to know their backstories and things like that and how they develop as characters. And
who was your favorite character in the books? In the 87th Precinct? Do you have a favorite character?
Hunter always said that Steve Carella was not the main character, although many people believe that Steve Carella is the main character of the series. But he's kind of a boring character in some ways because he's so clean-cut and straight-laced. And I like Meyer Meyer. He's a funny guy. He's a good character. Arthur Brown is a good character. Some of the female characters, Eileen Burke. I honestly don't like one character by themselves better than any of the other ones. I called them a collective hero because I think the sum of the characters is greater than its parts. And, of course, McBain himself believed that the city was probably the biggest character in the series, which is based on Manhattan.
Interesting, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you think of the city played a big part in his novels. I mean, definitely. I mean, they just, you know, you felt like you were in New York City,
right?
And just it's interesting. And you have a listing in the front of everything he ever wrote. Did he write a lot of short stories?
Oh yes, yep.
How many do we know? Do you know offhand how many he did write?
Oh, offhand, no.
I mean, I don't remember him ever being in Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, was he?
Yep, he was, even just a few years before he died.
Really?
Or in Ellery Queen, yep.
Okay, I used to read Ellery Queen religiously, and I just don't remember a story. I'm sure they were there. I must have missed them, because I was so busy reading Edward D. Hawk and some of the other ones that are so great. Are you a big mystery lover?
I am, yeah. Yep, my whole life I've been into mysteries and started out reading Sherlock Holmes stories and watching shows like Murder, She Wrote and all of that. So, Edgar Allan Poe.
It's funny you laugh when you say Murder, She Wrote. Like, you don't think people took that show seriously?
Well, I don't know if I would if I went back and looked at it now. But
I mean, it's dated now. I think in its time it was pretty decent. I mean, to watch it.
Yeah, that's true. I've moved away from the sort of the cozy mystery idea, the Agatha Christie type stuff, and it's not really my thing anymore, but you know, mysteries in general, I always love.
Cozy, right? I've never understood why people equate cozy with Agatha Christie, because I think while they usually were set in a small town, I never think of her books as being cozies, because they were always so psychologically, almost like psychological thrillers, a lot of them were. Because it was all about why people did things. You know, what motivated a killer to kill.
Yeah, no, that's true. I guess it's because a lot of those Golden Age works tended to have a big class element to them. They were about, you know, members of the upper class, or they took place in a country manor, and, you know, they have butlers and things like that. So it's just a different world from what I tend to like reading about now is more the Ed McBain style of the, you know, urban crime, and a little bit more cynical and realistic, maybe.
Right. Do you like Michael Connelly?
You know, I haven't actually read him. There are so many people that I haven't had a chance to read yet because I've been so busy with this book, and now I'm working on a book on Ian Rankin.
Oh, are you really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, I love Ian Rankin. I've been reading him for...
I made a mistake at one of the conferences to actually call him... I think I called him Irish instead of Scottish.
Uh-oh.
He was not happy about that.
Oh, I guess not.
But I still remember that. Isn't that funny how you remember those little things that were... Well, what's the name of the first 87 Springsteen? Was it Cop Hater?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you impressed that I knew that?
Yep, I am. You know what year it was published?
Oh, I would say in the 50s sometime. 52, maybe?
No, not quite that early. 56.
56. I was close.
Yeah. Cop Hater, the Mugger, and the Pusher were all... he was contracted for the first three, and they all came out around the same time.
Now, I didn't realize before that they were sort of a replacement for the Earl Stanley Gardners.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. They wanted something to take the place, sort of like to... Well, Earl Stanley Gardner, had he died by then?
He was aging, is the way they put it, so... I guess he was on his way out.
I don't know if you ever got into the Perry Mason. I would much rather watch the show than read the books. They never really appealed to me much. I don't know why.
Yeah, well, it's a very different style from Ed McBain's style.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they replaced him with something that's completely similar, but they just wanted something that could be an entertaining series, I guess.
Now, is this you on the cover of this book?
No. No.
I'm just. This is supposed to. What did they call them? Dime novels.
Yeah.
And were some of his books called dime novels too?
Originally, I mean, he started out writing sort of pulpy, hard-boiled stories for magazines like Manhunt. And then his first novels were very hard-boilish, if that's a word. But by the end of his career, he wasn't writing that kind of stuff at all. So when I think of Ed McBain, I think more of police procedurals. I don't really think of hard-boiled novels, but he started out with that.
I'm looking at some of these covers in here, Sin Sheet, Showcase for Sin, and these are different authors. These aren't all.
That would be Dean Hudson.
Yeah.
Who may or may not have been Ed McBain, Evan Hunter.
Really?
Well, yes. It's several people have claimed that they have personal knowledge that was a pseudonym of Evan Hunter at one point, but other people, including his wife, have said that it wasn't him. He himself, before he died, denied being Dean Hudson.
That's weird. What would make people think he was?
Well,
just the writing style?
There are people who claim that they worked with him on these books, that they edited them and saw them being taken to the publisher and things like that. So, and I've read some of them, and I tend to think there may be some truth to the rumors that some of the themes and the writing styles and the jokes are pretty similar. But that doesn't mean that he was Dean Hudson, but if I had to say yes or no, I'd probably say yeah.
It's like somebody always said that somebody else wrote Margaret Truman's books. I never found out for sure whether that was ever true, and now that she's dead and somebody is actually writing the books for her, keeping up the series, I should say, not writing them for her, but you always wonder, you know. I mean, if Stephen King had somebody writing for him, I think I'd know it, because
yeah.
His writing style is so unique.
Right.
But would you feel the same way about Ed McBain, that if somebody else was writing him? I mean, have you read the Dean Hudson ones?
Yeah, I've read several of them.
Do they have any kind of feel of Ed McBain to them?
Yeah, I think they do.
Oh, you do.
Some of them don't, and some of them may not have been written by him, but I believe that some of them were.
Hmm. Why would his wife say they weren't, I wonder? That's strange.
Well, he denied it, so...
Yeah. It's strange that he would deny it if he had something to do with it. That doesn't make sense.
Well, they were not just erotica. I mean, some of them contained some kind of controversial stuff, so...
Oh, I see.
He just didn't want to have anything to do with... Maybe he didn't want people to think of that when they thought of him.
Yeah, that makes sense. I didn't realize they were... that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I never thought of Ed McBain as writing like that. I mean, Anne Rice did, so why wouldn't other writers write like that?
Yeah, well, some of the Ed McBain books, even some of the 87 Precinct series, are actually pretty raunchy. They are.
Yeah, I believe you. I don't remember reading many of them were, but it may have been. Was it the earlier ones that were raunchy or the later ones? Or do you remember?
Both. I mean, there's a novel called Doll that was fairly old of the 87 Precinct series that has some of that in it, but some of the later stuff as well.
Now, he was married, what, two or three times?
Three times.
Three times.
Yeah.
And what, the longest marriage being the last one?
Yeah, well, maybe not. He was married for quite a long time to his first wife.
Oh, okay.
Now, that was the one that Hitchcock met, was friends with.
Wow, I wonder. Now he wrote other screenplays too, right? Didn't he write? Was it The Asphalt Jungle that he wrote?
No, he wrote The Blackboard Jungle.
Blackboard Jungle. That's the one I'm thinking of. Blackboard.
Yeah,
I knew it had jungle in it.
That was his first published novel, and it was made into a film. But he didn't really have anything to do with the film.
Oh, he had written the book, but he didn't write the screenplay for that.
Right.
But did he write other screenplays besides The Birds?
He wrote them for some of his own films, which were some of his own books that were made into films. Not all of them, though.
Right. It's funny how writers, you know, I'm always amazed that they do tend to write some of their own screenplays. Sometimes I think they want to, but I guess they, you know, it's a good feeling to know that you're writing what's going to be in the final film, or most of what's going to be in the final film. So maybe that's why they do it.
If it was me, I would want to have control over what to do with my book.
But sometimes they just, you know, even though they can change around anything they want nowadays.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, they change endings, they change all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
But how many years did you work on this book? Total?
Probably about 5 years.
5 years? This is 5 years of your life, getting all this stuff together. And what was the hardest part?
Just finding the time, probably, because it was so, I mean, I had to go through every line of every book he'd ever written, every short story, every work that had ever been, every article that had ever been written about him. I mean, I tried to find as many of the best ones as I could. It just took a lot of time, and I did have a full-time job, and I gave birth to my two children at the same time. So it was just hard to find the time.
Right.
But I had some help from some other people, so...
Do we know exactly how many books he sold in his lifetime at McBain?
No, I've never bothered to look that up, but I know that they sold very well throughout the whole 50-year-long series. I mean, he was a best-selling author for pretty much his entire career.
Yeah, you said that first 87th reason was 1956, but that wasn't the first thing he wrote, though.
No, The Blackboard Jungle was his first published novel.
Now, have you talked to his wife?
Yeah.
His current wife?
I have, yep.
Was she okay with you writing the book?
She was. She helped me out. She gave me as much help as she could. She even donated the photo of him that's on the cover.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah, the one, there's the one up, up top
she
there.
She took that herself.
I mean, this is such a nice-looking book, too. And I mean, according to this, the first one was Find the Feathered Serpent.
Oh, that's right.
From 1952. That's, according to this, that's the first one. Now, why are the ones highlighted in black? Are they the 87th Precinct?
Yeah.
That's really cool how you did that. So, I mean, it makes it so much easier. There's Dahl, the one you were talking about. Are there some that are that you'll never forget?
All of them.
Really?
Most of them. Even, you know, the ones like...
But if I said to you, name me three that I should read, well, could you name me three right off the bat that really got to you?
Of just the 87th series?
Yeah, or anything, you know, either way.
Oh, boy.
I'm just wondering if there's some that stand out. I always find that with a mystery author that there's always one that stands out. Like when with Val McDermott, she wrote a book called A Place of Execution, which is an absolute masterpiece of mystery. I don't know if you've read it.
No.
If you should read it if you haven't read it, because it's just, to me, it's the best mystery I've ever read.
Wow.
I don't know why I say that, other than the fact that it's a great book. But, I mean, I don't know why. I constantly think of it when I think of mysteries that really stood out. And to me, that one stood out. Because some of her other ones tend to be gory, and I don't like it. And Ed McBain never really got gory, did he?
No, he didn't flinch when writing about... the nastiness of crime and of murder. I mean, he does describe people being killed and, you know, things like that. Realistically, he doesn't gloss over it, but he doesn't do it in a sensationalizing kind of a way either. It's not gratuitous.
Now, did he write some of the Alfred Hitchcock Presents ones on TV?
That's the one that he did really inspired Hitchcock to ask him to do the screenplay.
What was the name of that one?
Oh, I'm trying to remember.
Do you remember?
You're asking me about things I did years ago, but...
Yeah, that's okay.
If you look it up in the book under the Hitchcock entry, it will tell you.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, I'll definitely do that.
Some of my favorite books, if you would like me to answer that question, because, I mean, honestly, I love most of them. But as far as the 87th series goes, I think the later ones are better than the earlier ones, for the most part.
Why do you say that?
They became a lot more complex, and they became a lot more complex stylistically and thematically, more sort of postmodern, where he was always self-aware in his writing and drawing attention to himself as the author and as the narrator. But aside from that, he's just became more adept at integrating these social issues about gender and race and class. And the media was also a big theme in his works.
Right.
And I just think he got to the point where he could do it blindfolded in his sleep. He was such a good writer.
I'm just amazed at this book. I mean, it's just really, there's just so much to it. And, you know, you can go through this time and time again and see all these things. And all the characters in every book. It's just amazing.
Actually, I didn't even put in every single character in every book because... In most of his books, he had 70 to 100 characters.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So are these just the main characters in each book, or?
They are. They're the main characters, and they're the main minor characters. You know, but we couldn't put in every single character. The book would have been five times the size that it is now.
That's true. It would be like an encyclopedia of Ed McBain.
Yeah. So I tried to put in... everything that I thought was important to know about his works. So there's entries on his most important themes, entries on his philosophy of writing, and, you know, all that kind of stuff, as well as the books and the characters and the films.
Now, later on, he did some... The Criminal Conversation was written under the name Evan Hunter, right?
Yep.
And that was while he was doing the 87th Precinct, so he would write under both names.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, when was the last time he had written one under Evan Hunter before that, before he started up again? Or was it all the way through?
Candyland was one of his more recent ones that he wrote under both names, so that was kind of interesting.
I wonder what made him decide what name to write under.
Well, because they were written in different styles and they were different genres, so he did that very deliberately. The police procedural novels, the 87th Precinct series, were all written under the Ed McBain name, in anything that was kind of similar to that genre and written in that sort of style, usually third-person narration and dealing with cops or a team of cops. Whereas the Evan Hunter books were what he called his straight fiction. They were more dramatic. They usually involved more of the psychological realism of the characters. And they were sometimes told in the first person.
What to you makes a great mystery?
Oh.
I mean, what do you look for in a mystery that excites you? I mean, what?
I can tell you what I don't look for. I've never been one who reads mysteries trying to solve them. I've never looked for clues and tried to solve the mystery.
You don't like that?
No. It's not about the puzzle to me. I don't really care about the puzzle. And I don't think Ed McBain really did either.
What do you think he did care about? Just from reading all his books, in your mind, what did he care the most about? It seemed like characters were big for him. I mean, just characterization.
Well, in some of the books, but in some of the books, I don't think his characters are all that well developed, and I don't think they needed to be. Like in the 87th Precinct series, it's a combination of this team of heroes and the... but it's also the atmosphere of the city and all the comments that he's making about American society. I mean, Ezola, his name for Manhattan, is really a microcosm for American society. So I found that really compelling and interesting, and more so than, you know, Steve Carella's characterization. In some of his Evan Hunter works, the non-87th works, he does a lot more character development than he does in the 87th series.
Right. Now, basically, how long would it take you to read one of the 87th Precincts? If you sat down and read one now, how long would it take you to read it?
I'm probably a slow reader, but, 3 hours, 4 hours.
Wow, that's pretty fast. And I know my sister could read an Agatha Christie in an hour and a half.
It depends on how big they are, because some of the 87ths are actually quite long, and some of them are really short.
But do you remember most of the plots? I mean, do they stay in your head even today?
Yeah, some of the plots are...
if I said titles, would you be able to tell me the plot of it?
Oh, don't test me like that.
I didn't think so, but I was curious.
Some of them, but maybe not others. He Who Hesitates has an interesting plot. That one came out in 1965. What I like about that book, it's an 87th Precinct novel, but unlike all the other ones, it's not told from the point of view of the detectives. It's actually told from the point of view of the criminal.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, which is more like some of his earlier stories or, you know, non-87 things. But in that one, it's all about this guy who basically gets himself into trouble, kills someone, and he's hesitating because he's figuring out whether he should turn himself into the police or not. And we only see the detectives through his eyes. So we see him watching Carella with his wife and things like that. So I thought that was a really interesting way to...
Sometimes when they change tack like that, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It sounds like it worked on that one for you.
I think it did, yeah. I mean, Evan Hunter, in my opinion, could write in any genre. He was just, he became so skilled at storytelling, he could do it in any genre. Hang on a second, my son's trying to talk to me here.
Somebody's excited there.
Yeah, she's very excited.
Mommy, I got two breaking bunnies.
That's great, honey.
I got two.
But, You've read just about all the 87th Precincts.
I've read all of those. Yeah.
Who do you read that is? Have you read anybody else that's similar to Ed McBain that you could get just as excited about? Besides Ian Rankin, you mentioned Ian Rankin.
Yeah, I would say Ian Rankin. I don't think they're definitely different styles, but I think Rankin was partly influenced by the American procedural novels and by Ed McBain. But his style is different, and his emphasis is different. Even though he writes about Inspector Rebus is a police officer, but he's much more of a loner type. Whereas Ed McBain wrote about a team of heroes.
And I think wouldn't you say Ian Rankin's a lot darker? His books are a lot darker than Ed McBain's were.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say a lot darker because I think McBain he got maybe a little more dark and cynical. As the years went on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, they're just slightly different styles. I think that McBain is more concise.
Yeah, I've always wondered, as authors age, how hard it is to write a book. What they have trouble with. I mean, of course, their memory. So they have editors, so I guess the editors can help them with remembering things about their characters or...
Well, he did ask, there was a man in Japan who I corresponded with to give me some help with the book, and another one in Sweden, and they were both really big fans of the 87 Precinct series as it was being written, before I'd even heard of it. And he apparently did write to them at some points asking them things about the series that he'd forgotten and asking them to come up with summaries of character backstories and things like that.
Oh, really? That's
yeah.
really, that's really cool. You're on your own fans.
Mm-hmm.
That's neat.
He had a really good relationship with his fans. He even maintained his own website and would respond to people who emailed him.
And he, like I said, he definitely had a sense of humor, because I witnessed it when I saw him a couple of times. And I remember one night there were at least 150 people there.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite a crowd. And, you know, by that time he was a legend in the mystery genre. I mean, people just loved him.
I am really surprised, though, and saddened by the number of people now who haven't heard of him. And that, you know, if I walk into my bookstore, I don't see books by Ed McBain, and they should really be there. They should be on the shelf.
Now, should people read the 87th Precinct in exact order? I mean, is that necessary?
No, I don't think it's necessary. I think you could pick up one of the later ones. I mean, he does, throughout the series, he does kind of little recaps to tell you who these characters are and just gives you a brief summary of a character's backstory. So I don't think it's necessary.
I mean, it's daunting to think that you... Well, there aren't any more published now, but, I mean, you said there's 50-some of them.
Yeah.
It's kind of daunting when to read that many books in one series, but if they're that good, you'll want to. I mean, that's just... I mean.
Yeah. Well, I have a colleague at the college where I teach who recently retired, and he said his plan for when he retired was to reread all of the 87th Precinct series.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And he already read them already? Isn't that amazing?
Reread them.
I've never been able to read books over again
for
the second time. I don't know why. And then a lot of times the second time around, you notice things you didn't notice the first time.
Exactly. That's like watching a film more than once.
Well, it's just because I have so many new ones I like to read. So
right.
Going back and reading something I've already read, you know, I feel like I'm missing out on the new stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's a trade-off, and this is why I haven't read as many people as I should have read by now, because I've been so busy with one or two authors.
Now, McFarlane has four of these out, the four different writers.
The Mystery Companion series.
Yeah, I mean, are they going to continue the series past the four, or do you know?
Yeah, no, I believe they are.
I mean, the first one is John Buchan, who I'm not even familiar with John Buchan. I don't know that name. And then the second one's E.X. Farrar's, and the third one's this one. And then we have Mary Elizabeth Braddon.
Right. Yep. She was an English author, I believe, during the Victorian period.
I wonder how they pick who they're going to... Is it? And then Andrea Camilleri, I guess that's how you say it, Camilleri, who my friend is a huge fan of. Is it a him or a her? I think it's a him, right?
I'm not
Camilleri.
Even.
I think it's a man. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
It's hard to know these sometimes,
yeah.
You know, and you feel. I mean.
Well, Ian Rankin book is going to be in this series as well.
Oh, it is. And when do you expect
it ever gets finished?
Now, how many Ian Rankin books have you read as of right now?
All of them except the last one.
So, and I think the new series, I think the first one was Impossible Dead. Is that the new series?
Yes.
Yes, that's, I think, and well, Rebus retired, but now he's not retired anymore. I don't know how that works, but...
Right, so there's two novels with his new character, Malcolm Fox, and he is basically an internal affairs guy. But now with the new one, Standing in Another Man's Grave, he's bringing Rebus back.
See, I'm just curious what gets you hooked on a series. I mean, what? You've already said what you liked about Ed McBain. I'm curious what decides for you whether you continue with the series or not. I mean, you must read a lot of mysteries and just think, I liked it, but I wouldn't read the whole series.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe humor. I mean, there has to be a certain amount of wit in it. There has to be some sarcasm, some satire, some cynicism for me to really be interested in it, I think. And I think Rankin makes some interesting comments on society, too.
Now, will you meet him before the book's published, do you think?
I don't know. I'd love to go back to Scotland. I've only been there once.
That would be cool. What a and you could do it on your taxes. You know, it's a tax write-off because you're writing a book.
Right.
Now this book's almost 400 pages long. I think it's is it 400? It's close to 380, like 390, and it's got a nice index in the back. Thank you for that, because I'll tell you how many times I wish there were indexes in the backs of books. And
that was that was a lot of work doing an index. It's the first time I did an index, and I mean, it's not something you could even pay someone else to do, because I had to, you know, there was a lot of stuff in there that was kind of subjective that I had to know what I was talking about.
Right.
But it took hours to compile that index.
Yeah, see, that you go on to realism and all these things in the back that you can just look up all the different plots, I guess, too, with all the... Now, he wrote a story called The Axe, but not to be confused with the Donald Westlake book, The Axe, right?
Axe?
Yeah.
Yeah, Axe is a novel in the 87th Precinct series.
It is, okay. Because I looked at it and I thought, wait a minute, do I have the wrong... And I realized, no, that was Donald Westlake. Donald Westlake wrote a book called The Axe, which is absolutely an amazing book. Because it's all about this guy who decides that in order to get the job he wants, he's going to kill everybody else who's up for the job. And I mean, and it's just... It's really an amazing book.
Yeah.
If you ever get a chance to read it, do so. It's like nothing you've ever read before. And you know, Donald Westlake was quite a great writer in his own. I mean, somebody could do a thing on his books too.
Yeah. Oh, and I was just thinking about when you asked me what I like about mysteries and what other mystery authors do I like. I would mention Stieg Larsson.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Girl's Dragon Tattoo series, and I would say I like him for the exact same reasons probably that I like Ed McBain and Ian Rankin. That they have you know, realism, cynicism, comment on society, humor, strong characters.
And Salander. Yeah, Salander.
Elizabeth Salander, yeah. She is
just a tremendous character. I mean, it's not every day you read a character in a series that just really you take to. I mean, people say, well, why is everybody reading those books? I mean, what is it about the Dragon Tattoo that got everybody hooked? And, you know, and everybody, and there's been so many readers, but I think a lot of it is Salander. I think without her, you wouldn't have much of a book.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's what is interesting about a series. When you have that character that really stands out, that character that you really like, and you want to hear what they have to say, and that's, to me, that's what makes it all worthwhile. I mean, Hercule Poirot, I mean, just a fascinating character.
And I think that's why people want to see Rebus come back. They want to hear Rankin talk about Specter Rebus again because they like the character so much. All his little quirks and idiosyncrasies, and they just love him for it. But that's what's interesting to me about Ed McBain, is that he doesn't have that one single detective character. And that's not really what's all that intriguing about his works. It's everything else.
Right, and there's so much else. I mean, who knew there was all these different, 120 different things, you know, that he's done, and the birds, you know, and just all this stuff. If you're a fan, there's just no end to what you can read.
Yeah, and he was so influential. I think people don't realize how much he influenced, you know, even people like Stephen King.
Yeah, I mean, I love looking at the covers. The covers are fascinating. I mean, some of them are. The Hard Case Crime. Now, did he publish Hard Case Crime recently? Did they republish one of his older books?
Yes. The Gutter in the Grave was a Hard Case Crime book that started out as a Matt Cordell novel many, many years ago.
So
they republished that one.
Because Hard Case Crime has this whole series of books. The covers are amazing. In fact, we had a woman come into our store and was offended by the Hard Case Crime covers, some of them.
Yeah.
Well, there's one of a woman with holding a knife, and she has not one stitch of clothing on.
Right. Well, this is another reason why some people are interested in the Dean Hudson books, because those covers are pretty interesting, too.
I wish we had Ed here and we could ask him and see if he was lying to us whether he wrote them or not. Because
right.
I know even Dean Koontz wrote what's close to pornography, and a lot of people don't know that.
Yep.
And you know, and but I mean, they're right. They still have.
I don't know why you should be ashamed of something when you wrote it. At the time you wrote it, you wanted to write it. You were enjoying writing it. And there's all types of literature. Why should we be offended because it's just not something we would read, you know?
Well, some of it could be accused of being sexist or misogynistic or whatever.
I guess so. Yeah,
but,
that's true.
You know.
But look at Thomas Harris. Look at the books he writes, you know.
Yeah.
You have to wonder what goes through that man's mind.
Yeah.
But he's a very skillful writer, though. Let's get,
well,
you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's been great to talk to you.
Well, thank you.
And the book, again, is called Ed McBain, Evan Hunter, A Literary Companion. It's published by McFarland. You can get it online and maybe in some of your bookstores. Thanks again.
Thank you very much.
This has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.